COVID.
COVID was a great time for good weather.
Good weather. Yeah.
I'm sure we played golf when you were allowed to, and we looked over and we could actually look over the water, and you could see the windows.
Yes.
Down by Grant and then Leith.
Very clear.
I wonder if that's really? Just part of there's no as much pollution.
Pollution
as well.
That whole reset.
Aye.
It was amazing how clear it was. Aye. Like noticeably.
Aye.
Because everything was shut down
at the time. I remember that. Because nobody was on the road. There was no aeroplanes.
How many garden fences were painted at that time? How many garden fence paint?
Well, I was sitting in my office in the house. Telling people about furlough. So I never got a chance to put my garden fence, which is one of the few. All my mates furloughed and sitting in their garden drinking beers all day, and I'm working away.
And now, 5 years later, we're recovering from that.
Yeah.
Five years later, this is a great segue into the next conversation, because that's a good question to ask. 5 years later on, was it 5 years?
That's 5 years, right? We're in lockdown this time 5 years ago. 23rd of March.
It's amazing, isn't
it? Wow.
We went in.
Time flies, eh?
I know.
So when you moved the needle, you had furlough, you had all these things. People didn't know what was going to be going on.
Mm-hmm.
Then we slowly, if you want to call it, got into a transition of going back to work.
Yep.
Then we've got this flexible working. Then we've had the landscape, the political landscapes. We've had two prime ministers. We've had Ukraine war. We've had the utilities.
Cost of living.
We've had America now. We've had stuff happening in Jerusalem or whatever. Is it Jerusalem?
Israel.
Palestine.
And God knows, independence. Then the Nicola Sturgeon stuff. I mean, the whole thing's just been great. It's a great show.
If this was a soap opera, we couldn't have scripted it any better.
But this is all in 5 years.
I know.
You're like, God, how... So where we're at now...
I was just going to say, where's the question and all that?
I'm just coming. You just be patient, son. So where we're at now in business, with all the taxations and national insurance, to where we were at COVID, can you tell us the difference? Do you think it's good or bad?
Well, the depends how you look at it. So I suppose it's a good kind of summary there, because what we have got now, in the space of that last 5 years, the world of work has completely changed. So you know, 5 years ago, if somebody says to you, what did they do, kind of hybrid working, it wasn't even a thing that was that well known. Mm-hmm. Now hybrid working is here to stay, whether we kind of like it or not. Employers have embraced it. Employees see it as a kind of given. So the world of work has kind of transformed. You see it when you're out and about, you know, you kind of go in the city centres. You know, I think a Monday and a Friday tend to be people are working at home and tend not to be in the office. Roads are noticeably quieter. So I think the world of work has definitely kind of changed in the space of that 5 years, and that is continuing to evolve. People are kind of joining the working environment now. They're expecting that kind of flexibility and that hybrid kind of approach.
I'm going to echo that. I mean, you know, previously you would never think that some jobs would be able to be done completely remotely. I take my son, because he was in university through COVID.
Mm-hmm.
He's never had an office job. Yeah. His job has always just been remote. So what that means is a generation growing up
mm-hmm.
that can work from anywhere in the world. And now I've got some clients that we call them digital nomads.
Yeah.
And they travel the world and their businesses
digital
are set up.
Nomads.
Yeah. they travel all over. They don't need to be based in one certain place. So, I mean, in 5 years, you can accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I was in Glasgow. I went into a coffee shop and mm-hmm. I was speaking to the owner. And he was actually in the process of shutting down. And part of the reason is that nobody's coming into the offices.
Yeah, yeah.
So his footfall has dropped dramatically. Absolutely. And it's cost increases and
definitely.
All that. It's just not worth
the
it.
Coffee
for
shops, the sandwich bars, all these places that rely on that sense of trade that are just no longer in the workplace.
You say that.
Physically in the workplace.
You say that, but I was in Edinburgh last week. And I see Black Sheep Coffee. It's got like four or five outlets in Edinburgh.
Thing,
right? I mean, granted, it's probably tourists.
Well, no, it's not actually. So I was in Edinburgh day last week as well, and I had a bit of time to kill. And what I found is it's the digital nomads that you're talking about.
Right.
So probably the people that have not got the set up at home to work, so they can work from anywhere. And what they're doing is they're working in a Starbucks or a Black Sheep Coffee, wherever it is, and probably buying a couple of cups of coffee, and that's them for the day. And that's what they're doing.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen it myself. And if you go into the one in Kirkcaldy at the retail park, there's a guy who brings his monitor and he's got another piece of kit, and I'm like, you're taking the piss here, mate. Somebody else has got a laptop. He's got the full shebang. So he's made himself out. So he's sitting there, anytime I pop in, they have a look.
I'm going to.
Honestly, I'm like, well, it's cheaper that than having a...
And then you piggyback off the Wi-Fi, maybe not as great, but...
It's actually interesting you said that about Edinburgh. I was in a networking group and Essential Edinburgh were there. And I don't, does any of you know what Essential Edinburgh is? So it's an organisation that helps drive footfall in Edinburgh. But what happens is in the geographical area, like Princess Street, George Street, St James's and a wee bit of the West End, you have to pay a 1% levy of your profits. Mm-hmm. And what happens is they know a lot of its office blocks and they know a lot of retail. So what they're trying to do is bring footfall in for the retail, but then the people in offices, what they want is they want clean streets. They want an extra bit of policing just for people, you know, maybe working later. They feel it's safer, extra street lighting and things like that.
Okay.
So totally never heard of this in my life, but they are making... you know, a good proportion of money, but what they're also doing is trying to invest. And they said part of the St. James's part, James's Quarter, reinvested Johnny Walker investment. There's millions and millions of pounds getting pumped into Princess Street just now. But what they say is the curb appeal is a bit deflating, but you have to wait that 3 years, four, 5 years until it regenerates itself. And he gave you a list of all the hotels that have pumped money in. You're like, wow, just, that's why the scaffolding doesn't look pretty, but we're behind trying to dress the scaffolding up and things. I'm like, wow, I never knew there was a company that did such a thing like that.
It's phenomenal.
But the regeneration of the, even in Scotland, just Perth, Dundee, Edinburgh, Glasgow, they need money getting pumped into these places and they need the footfall. So we talk about flexible working. What are we doing to try and bring people in there? You know, these companies that I've got there, your cafes, your coffee shops, your clothing.
I know. And it's also the pubs and restaurants in the evening as well, because you would have kind of after, you know, after work, go for drinks and that kind of thing. If you're not in the office, you can't do that. And I think that's how it's impacted on the hospitality sector, because there's not that kind of footfall there as well. And I think some of the city centres are then charging extortionate rates for car parking and stuff like that. So it's just not attracting people to kind of come in. So you're seeing that with the nighttime hospitality finishing earlier, certainly kind of Monday to Friday, because the footfall's not there, but it's also so expensive for customers to make arrangements to get into the city centres. Another thing I suppose you've then got is if that industry is struggling a little bit, because historically you'd find a lot of younger people would work in that industry, so they'd be learning some good life skills, good customer service skills, teamwork, the communication part. And if they're not doing that, they're not learning that, but it's impacting on us then trying to recruit younger talent and people who've maybe got a bit of life experience, because they're just not learning any of that. And you've got a situation then in the workplace, if they are working completely remote, they're not building relationships with colleagues, learning life skills in an office or a workplace environment. That's the big challenge. And I think that's the knock-on effect we're now seeing 5 years later, is that a lot of younger people coming to the workplace have got no real kind of work experience, because they've never had the opportunity, and it's not their fault.
Or social skills.
Exactly, yeah.
But it was interesting that you said that. Now, Michael and I were catching up a little bit earlier about the weekend, and he was at an establishment, and he was just saying to me, it's not the big things, hey, Michael.
Yeah.
It's not the big things. It's the little things where people let themselves down.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're in hospitality, it's not paying attention to detail, just not acknowledging somebody when you walk in
or
serving them their drink. Things like that. It's the little things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's necessarily an employer not onboarding his staff correctly.
Yeah.
Or if it's just a sign of times where they did or they just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it always comes down to poor leadership.
Yeah.
Leadership's the way forward. You know, out of the 10 people you meet in one day in business, like you meet a lot of businesses, you'll know yourself, they're not a very good leader.
Mm-hmm.
They're a very good leader. What's the attributes? What do they give off? All that. That's what you're looking for. I mean, any youngster, again, as you said, it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
They've grown up in an era where we grew up. We may be just fortunate to grow up in a different era where discipline, accountability was, you know, at the top priority. We used to get a belt around the lug. But then things, you know, nowadays, like, oh, you can't do it. Yes, you can do that. You know, there was nothing wrong with us. You know, it's just kids. I'll give you an example there, right? Sunday, coaching the football. Now, there's that drive and that determination. It was like a wee Fergie moment I had. That's what I got told. I wasn't interested if it was 45-0, if we got absolutely slaughtered. But what I was interested in is an attitude and behaviour like we use in business. Like you need to go out there and you need to do your best. Yep. Just do your best, have fun, but do your best. Every single tackle you possibly can, close it out and work for your teammates. And it was amazing how that's not at the forefront of their mind. Just in kids. In football, what is it like in the attitude to go and work? Now, you were talking earlier on there about the youngster wanting to buy a video game. 250 yeah. quid for it. He said, you go and get a job. But, well, how will I have time to go and play the video game? I mean, that is a,
that's a real
I mean,
story.
That would never, ever be a concept in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are you noticing now, Ali, with the people that you're looking after, the businesses that you're looking after, what is the biggest, are they having a lot of problems with the attitude and the staff intake?
There's a little bit of that. The biggest issue, I think, still is attracting kind of suitable kind of talent is the big thing that kind of comes up. But yeah, there is a little bit, once you've then got some people, there's kind of challenges. We are seeing kind of more and more kind of grievances kind of being raised, and that's a recent thing. And when you kind of delve into that, what you then find is that in most cases, the grievances have been unwarranted. It's come about because someone has been given feedback on something that they've not liked. So they then raised a complaint or raised a grievance. So the business has then got to kind of investigate that, invest the time and money to do it. And then in the grand scheme of things, when you then look at it, there wasn't anything that was really wrong with that. It's just individuals don't like constructive feedback is what's kind of come out. Now, there's an element also that's not strictly true in all cases. There's a couple of cases where we've seen it recently, and what's happened is it's perhaps been the message and the way in which it's been delivered.
Yeah.
And that comes back to leadership, perhaps a lack of training, not knowing what to say or how to say it. And that's so that you know it's kind of been the messaging's perhaps not been where it needs to be. But in a lot of the cases where we're seeing grievances at the minute, you know, in most cases, there's no real case to kind of answer. So that's a real issue. So I don't know if that's a combination of people not liking, you know, being told something that, you know, around their performance, or there's an element of lack of kind of social skills that you kind of mentioned because they've been so used to maybe working at home or working hybrid and then in a business setting, having to work with others, just, you know, not knowing how to deal with that. And then if they're receiving feedback, thinking, oh, I don't like that. So there's a bit of that. And I think people are less tolerant, perhaps. So, you know, easy just to kind of raise a grievance if they're not happy with something.
And what would you do to combat that? So let's say the businesses that you're looking after just now, there's a lot of youngsters, you know, young 20-year-olds.
And it's not just youngsters that are raising the grievances, by the way. It's not.
That's very interesting, that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say, how do you go back to the start when you're interviewing?
Yeah.
Do you ever do interview processes or interviews with your clients?
We do in some cases, aye. So, I mean, it's probably stripping it right back and going back to what's your core values? What do you stand for? What's your kind of company vision? And having that, you know, not just on a bit of paper, but having them clearly defined, and as part of your interview selection process, that's the type of questions you want to ask, whether it's personality questions or delving in a bit deeper at the interview kind of process around that. But then once you've got the people on board, I think what's important is that whole onboarding piece, but the regular kind of communication around this is what we stand for, here's the behaviours that are acceptable, here's what's not, uh-huh. And then having your leadership team trained to actually manage that on a day-to-day basis, so that becomes part of the fabric of the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That has to, so, because what can happen is if you see something that's not right and you let somebody away with it, that's going to spread like wildfire in your business because they see, well, he got away with that or she got away with that. So you really need to address it. So it's catching people doing the right thing and giving them positive feedback on that. But likewise, if somebody's done something that's not right, you give them that feedback in a constructive manner, not to kind of make them self-destruct or, you know, feel deflated, but in a way that's going to help them and help the business and get that message across. So it comes back to that leadership piece, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an important thing as well, you say, because I don't think it happens enough where people get praised for the stuff that they're doing well.
Exactly.
It's always just about the negative stuff.
Aye. And that's, you know, I get that from some of the businesses that work with, because, you know, when you flick the news on, it's all negative, you know, NIC costs, the tariffs, everything like that. So you might then have the leader's mindset might be negative. Yeah. So they take out a team member, but maybe not seen what somebody's done that week in a positive. Mm-hmm. So
people love a drama.
Oh, aye.
So EastEnders is still going and Coronation Street.
I've watched that for decades.
What about rewards and recognition, Ellie? You know, you said the talent pool, attracting the right talent is becoming a lot more difficult. And I think the good guys are demanding a higher wage or a higher salary.
Yeah.
What are organizations doing differently to try and recognize and reward people and keep them?
Yeah. Good question.
So you might have stuff around kind of flexible benefits around that. So that might be a little bit of kind of hybrid working. One of the things at the minute we're seeing to try and combat the national insurance rises is offering salary exchange kind of schemes. So what you might have is somebody's on, say, £40,000 a year as a salary. You can do like a salary sacrifice, salary exchange kind of scheme, and it allows them to put more money into their pension. And that saves them NIC and also use the employer. Not just pension, you could do electric car leasing type scenarios and that type of thing. So that kind of flexible benefit approach is quite good from that side of things, but there's a benefit to the employee and to the employer. So you're seeing stuff like that. Holidays are always a good kind of perk. So kind of looking at different kind of holidays that you can kind of offer. And definitely kind of training kind of programs. So what is there a career pathway for them?
Yeah.
Is that a professional qualification or an industry recognised kind of qualification? And what you probably want to do as part of that as a retention tool, if you're funding that, you would want to get some kind of agreement that if they leave within 12 or 18 or 24 months that there's a payback. So you get something back in return for that as well, but you're also investing in that individual's future.
And then how important is money in all of this? You know,
money's important, but it's not the main driver, I have to say. People want to work in a business where they feel respected, they feel part of something, there's good culture, but obviously people have got kind of bills to pay, so you know everybody will be different. So obviously if the cost of living's impacting on them and there's another opportunity that's going to pay them 10 grand a year, then that's where they're going to go.
I suppose that the difficulty that you as a business owner faces, let's just say your staff, you want to increase their salaries by 3 or 4% a year or 5%, but you yourself are struggling to make ends meet. How do you balance that out?
Yeah.
I think that's because... You know, you may be worried that you can't increase your prices. Your prices are too low, but your staff, if you want to retain them, everybody wants more money because everything is going up.
Yeah,
and it's that balance.
I know, but and for the business difficult. Point, everything's going up as well. So you then just had the beginning of April, the national minimum wage has gone up. So you know, naturally, if you're kind of just paying above that, then you probably want to give your team members an increase to stay above that. So that's probably a 6% rise that you're having to kind of give just to kind of stay where you are. From yesterday, the national insurance cost has went up another kind of couple of percent or so. So that's an increase. Then you've got your team members looking for an increase as well. So yeah, they're feeling it, but also the businesses are feeling it. So who pays for that is the customer, because ultimately you're going to have to kind of pass that on somewhere. Or if not, then you're going to run out of cash.
It's just how long you wait to do it. Because if you think about large organizations, the likes of a Tesco or a supermarket chain, they're not going to absorb that because they've got shareholders. They're a capitalist organization. They're going to pass it on to the end user, the consumer.
Yeah.
And they won't just do it in one foul swoop. They've already drip fed it in because they've already looked at it. You just don't look at it.
Mm-hmm.
It increases by 20p here, 20p here. Who notices if coffee jumps by 5 or 10p? Would you know?
You probably know, but you
wouldn't know. I mean, if I do the weekly shopping, you kind of know that's went up, but I wouldn't know specifically, well, what's going up. It's when you get to the checkout and you're paying for it, and like that was 80 quid last week, now it's 100, you're like, but you wouldn't know the specifics or which items probably.
And are you finding over the last sort of few months leading up to this, are people taking the option to try and get rid of
stuff? There has been actually, so... It's a funny one. When it was first announced, we saw a bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of quietened off. And I kind of thought when we come into January this year, we would see a lot of that between January and April. And it's not happened so far. And I don't know if people have just not maybe realised, not planned. And maybe now they're going to feel the pinch after this month's payroll when they realise. But certainly I thought it would be some of the sectors, like so hospitality, retail, and these types of businesses that we look after would be coming to us to say, but they haven't done so far. So
that's good.
So that is good.
That's a good sign. And,
you know, that is a good sign, because I kind of thought from January to April that's what we would be doing a lot of. But there's been a little bit, but not a huge amount. And some of the redundancy stuff we've been doing is there's genuine redundancy there because of other factors, not because of the NIC kind of stuff. Yeah. So I'm making business decisions to restructure the business. So we've not seen a significant increase in that.
Good.
So touch wood that continues.
So that's a positive sign from an economic perspective, because the world is upside down at the moment. Trump, great for entertainment value, not good for anything else.
Hey, why?
That was a question, I guess.
Was it a question? Oh no. I just think some of his policies, because it's a tit for tat at the moment. So he increases tariffs everywhere. I think China is at the brunt because he increased everything there for 54%.
Yeah.
So
it was like that leadership board thing or something, eh? The leader board, and it was kind of the country's in order in terms of who was getting what.
Oh yeah, no. Did you see that?
Yeah.
So he's worked it out per country. So yeah. I don't know what the statistics are around it, but the UK was right at the bottom. So we're considering a measured approach, I believe, is the right terminology for that.
I don't know, something like whether it was right or wrong or whatever, you can't always believe everything that's on the news. But Land Rover and Jaguar have pulled the plug now for however many cars are sitting there waiting to be taken over to America.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting with the tariffs because it's going to be a knock-on effect. It's going to be passed down the chain anyway.
Yeah,
the same with Harley Davidson and Jack Daniels. So you know, tit for tat, you do this, then I'm going to do that. Nobody wins in the end of the day.
And I think it's a conversation piece.
I would just say, if you have a Harley, hold on to it, because your value is just going to go up, because they're going to be scarce now.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, someone on Friday, and they seem to think that this would, you know, naturally kind of drive interest rates down quite a bit. I didn't know if that was the end game here with you know, so there's a bit of drama at the minute. The markets are kind of crashing, and the outcome of that might be we need to reduce interest rates, so increases borrowing and gets the economy kind of spending again. So someone says to me on Friday they thought that might have been his end game, and this is all just a kind of charade to get that to kind of happen. So when I heard that, I thought, oh, maybe it's not all doom and gloom. But
just on that point for interest rates, at 4%, if you go back 20 years or 30 years, it's actually not a bad interest rate.
I know.
Mm-hmm. COVID has created this perception that debt should be cheap at 2 or 3%. That's not reality. It doesn't keep everything going. But I mean, that's an interesting one, Ali. I'm going to definitely keep my eye on that one.
Like it, love him, whatever. For the time that he's been in there, he's created change anyway. Everybody's talking about him. You know, it's great bit of advertising.
Well, it's not that. You get someone comes out of your business as a leader and you ask them, what's your 90-day plan? What are you going to do in the first 90 days? And he's only been in about that as well. And, you know, look at what he's done in that short space of time.
And it's not just him. There's a whole array of people that he's trying to get together that are probably better than him. But he needs to get the right people. I mean, he's having, talk about conversations, he's having hard conversations. I watched that in Congress with that I can't remember what other county. It was about not signing the bill for male playing male sports and females playing female sports. And she went, I'm not signing the bill. She went, I'll follow the law. Well, we are the law. We're the federal law. Mm. So you will sign it. And she says, well, I'll see you in court. He went, oh, I look forward to that. That'll be an easy win. And I think it was at the end of it, he went, I think you're going to have to step down because it's going to be very difficult for you to get re-elected. And he's saying that in public.
Yeah.
You know, there's no filler.
No.
I don't know. I actually enjoy it. I like it. It's maybe not the most professional, but I like it because it's authentic and he's trying to get stuff done. Whether you like it or love it or if it's going to affect, because there's always two sides or three sides to it. I tell you what,
it comes across as a kind of bully, and that, if that's what he's going to do on live TV, what kind of goes on behind kind of closed doors? Yeah.
Unless this is all just it's all jazz hands.
Yeah, who knows?
You don't know. That's interesting to watch.
It's better than the wishy-washy, never answer a question, no accountability, you know, from what we've got here. Just to touch on it. I'm not going further.
Nah, exactly. Politics.
I'll send you for a Monday morning.
Politics always interesting, especially when it relates to business, because it does impact your business either greatly or maybe not so greatly, but you do take a lot from it when you look at the people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the point, is how do the people manage things? But as a society, have we become too, I don't know what the right word is, but are we too...
Pandering. We're pandering to the minority.
Yeah. So is it things that were wrong 500 years ago, still wrong today? Are we trying to make adjustments to make it right? Have we gone, has the pendulum swung completely the other way? So take something like smacking your child. Okay, now I recognize that there are some people that take it to the nth degree, and that is probably 2 or 3%. But 97% of people now have to, they are being forced to do things that only 2 or 3% were actually doing badly? Are we moving in that direction with people for in sure. terms of business?
Well, you can always, if you always like, if you tend to watch comedians, they'll make it an observation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Mickey Flanagan when he was, you know, these kids just running about wild in the cafe. And he was saying some of them are called like Nebulizer and all these kind of things, just these wacky names. So that's part of that, how the creative flair's there. But he says the kids just run about doing nothing and they're trying to sit there and talk to them about their feelings. There's no accountability there. Yes, I understand there's a way to talk to a child and to do something a different way. I get that. But there's got to be a shock factor. You know, if you don't read the sign saying it's hot and you touch it, you go, bugger. That was sore. It's the kind of same idea. You know, mm-hmm. there has to be a consequence. Why do you tug your dog and go, ah, to pull its neck? It goes, that was bloody sore. Don't do that again. But it remembers it through neurological or pathways and how sore that was. And I'm not saying smack your child and go to town on your child, but there has been, you do it with animals. How sore is it for a horse?
Yeah. But I think what I see is that, you know, talking about that kind of setter is that parents just give the child a device in a restaurant and just to shut them up, just give them a tablet. Yeah, yeah. Or the parents are sitting on their phones, not engaging in a conversation with the children. So that you see that all the time. So that's a worry for the generation, you know, talking about their social skills and all that type of thing. Well, you know, they're not getting that interaction at home. Or when they're out, you know, they don't know how to behave in a restaurant because they've never been shown properly. Just get given a tablet or a device, keep them quiet. Whereas back in the day, you'd get like a crossword or do the pictures on the menu or whatever and have a bit of fucking the conversation. But so many parents nowadays just, you know, are on the phones themselves.
It's also, forgot what I was going to say there. Like, you know, we're like employees. To get the best out of an employee, they're all different characters and you have to find a way. And absolutely, I think kids are like, some kids need a smack and other ones just need a talking to.
Yeah.
But we don't have the choice for that. So you're just, everybody's getting shuffled down the one route and it's not right for everybody.
Yeah.
So let's just start smacking our kids. Is that what we're
saying? No, absolutely not.
I said that. He was on the line of the podcast. And said that.
But you can, though. That's the problem. It's just because most people are weak. You can do what the hell you need to do. If you're a parent, if you're a business owner, you do what you want to do, what you think is necessary, and you'll live and die by the sword. As simple as that. If you feel, there's nothing worse than just following everybody else, because I think you're just following them into a big pit.
Yeah,
so it's what your own values are. And you can look yourself in the mirror and say, I've done the right thing, I've done everything right in my business.
Aye, and there's always people on the sidelines comment, but they're on the sidelines, they're not on the pitch, they're on the sidelines. And there's always been people on the sidelines. You know, you've got a big platform now where social media, every bloody idiot is on it. And all it is, it's a place for idiots. They spill all their crap on it. And that goes back to the business when we talk about reviews and people doing certain things. Celebrities getting slated. You're like, what's going on with people?
I want to ask you this, Ali. You know, when employees get disgruntled because they are being called to task for things that they should be doing, how dangerous is social media for a business's reputation where employees can go out and leave maybe a one-star review because they're not contributing any policies as long as they're not writing anything.
Yeah.
And if an organization relies on reviews and that to go or leave negative reviews, is there an uptake on that or are employees smart enough not to do things like that?
You see a bit of that. Not so much with the kind of SME businesses that we kind of look after, but you see it with some kind of bigger businesses where it's easier for people to go and leave a negative review on the employer. But you can it's like any review, you can kind of read through that and see, you know.
But do people read through it or do they just think these guys are a bad company to work for? Do people actually apply their minds or are they sheep? Do they just follow and go, this is bad?
If it's a smaller business, it'll have an impact because you've got a smaller pool of people, if you like. So if you've got 10 reviews and 3 of them are bad, then people looking at that are probably going to think, do I really want to apply to that job? What they might do is reach out to people who are already still there and ask that question and say, I'm thinking about applying to your job. I can see you're there. Can you tell me what it's like? What's the culture like? So you see a bit of that. So I think, you know, seeing that more and more, people being more proactive around asking the people that are in the business, what's it like before they apply. Mm-hmm. So having that good employer brand is important for that point of view.
How important is employer brand? How important is to be recognized as an employer of choice? Or more pertinently, Not for now, but in the future.
Both, because I think, you know, we're talking about trying to attract that talent. So if you've got a strong employer brand, that's going to help you do that. It will help with retaining the people you've got at the minute, but also as you're continuing to grow to attract these people in the future. So and if you're not doing it, your competition are going to be doing it. So you want to kind of be ahead of the game in that respect. So it is important. And obviously, if you're in a, you know, if you're not a kind of well-known kind of name as such, and you're competing with some of these people locally, having that good local employer brand would definitely help you.
Be the employer of choice in your local community.
And that's a lot of the stuff that you're maybe doing already. So you guys are obviously doing a lot of stuff with the DYW, Career Ready, the stuff that you've been doing at Queen Anne High School and being recognised as that. And then obviously the stuff you're doing maybe locally with sponsoring like local football teams and stuff that you're doing in your business, promoting from within and, you know, that kind of family business feel. You're doing a lot of that at the minute. So it's getting that message out there as well to others.
Like, it's just, you know, from when I look at the trades side of things, I don't see a lot of tradesmen coming through because of how tight it is financially. And then it's the quality of the new or the next generation comes through. Don't get me wrong, there'll be a lot of kids that'll be brilliant. There's still always that. And it's maybe back to what we're talking about. We're talking about more negative stuff that's on the news. There's negativity everywhere. There's a lot of good candidates out there. It's just a little bit harder than it was before because we've got a lot of things that have happened from COVID. And I think it's left a bit of a gap with a generation. So it's how best we serve this generation that's maybe skipped a beat or two. And what can we do to make a difference for them, to help them? They might be just late bloomers. They might just late blooming. They might not arrive until their destination until 25, maybe 27, 30. We've got the digital age now, so everything's changed. You know,
You've also got a situation with some of the youngsters that left school maybe in the last 2 or 3 years, maybe a bit wrong with some of the dates, but there's some people who went to university who've never sat an exam at school and they got into university based on feedback from teachers, but there'll be other kids that never got that same opportunity based on that same feedback from teachers as well. So they've maybe then went down a path that they maybe didn't expect and probably through no fault of their own, just because maybe the teacher felt that certain kids were maybe at an advantage over others, but they never sat any exams.
Do you think that COVID has reset working expectations for everybody across the board? And I'll use this example in care homes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just a very, very simple example. Care homes, nurses used to work 40 hours. Come COVID, they had to change the way they're working. And then everybody realized, I actually don't need to work 40 hours. I actually need to work 20 hours to still have the same quality of life. And I could maybe claim some universal credits. Do you think that's a hangover of COVID, or is it more just of a conspiracy theory?
I think people did question their kind of lifestyle a little bit. So working long hours, people have kind of come out of that thinking, well, I want to spend more time with my family or do my hobbies and my interests and that type of thing. So they maybe reassessed their whole work kind of relationship type thing. I think, well, if I can earn the same amount of money doing less hours, I'm not sure it's a conspiracy thing. People have just decided, well, I want to spend more time with my family, or I want to have time with the kids or whatever. So I'm going to do different hours because people want to spend that kind of quality time. So there's a little bit of that perhaps. And I think there's also a generation of some of the people who were kind of maybe decided to retire a little bit early or take early retirement, but maybe work part-time because they didn't want to be in that rat race Monday to Friday working the hours. They've made a lifestyle choice thinking, I don't want to do this forever, and I'm going to be a bit more selective around my hours.
That's, I think, once you've had that was a forced break for everybody.
Yeah.
And when you're stuck in it constantly every day, you don't see just how much your ass are putting into things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Till you get the break, and then I think the reassessment happens.
Aye. Like you guys saying, if you were going golfing during furlough and stuff like that, people going out for a daily walk, probably normally they wouldn't be doing that kind of thing. Then thinking, you know what, I actually quite like this, so I want to do more of this. So there'll be an element of that, I think.
I think it's when you look at the government as a whole and the business as a whole, it needs to be, you know, it needs all its working bees going out there to collect the honey.
Mm-hmm.
And when something happens that they've created, we're not going down that rabbit hole, but they've created, it allows people to realign, go, oh, I want to refocus. Oh, maybe I don't want to do that. Maybe I don't want to do this and that, because the whole world came to an end. Yeah. The whole world stopped. Came to a stop. Yeah. So, interesting, if you were the business here, what do you now need to implement to get that streamlined again?
Mm-hmm.
What other events do you have to create?
Aye.
And just now you're looking at multiple events happening over the course of 5 years. Mm. What is that, to scare? Is it to split people up? Is it to be divisive? What are they doing here to try and get them back on track? Because ultimately, people need to make money.
Mm-hmm.
They need to spend money to keep the economy boosting. They need to be going on holiday. They need to be keeping the local community thriving. But something's happened here. So what are they now going to do up here as the leaders to impact change again? Something's got to come.
Yeah.
Which we have done as business owners as well.
Well, it's all, you know, as we said before, it's not just one way.
Mm-hmm.
But the leadership is always up here. So what are we doing in business, having to navigate around it? Great that you're talking about there's not as many businesses going under as you thought there would be, or we thought there would be. What are they doing up here? The leaders, the Illuminatis, whatever you want to call them, what are they doing to orchestrate this to get it a wee bit more streamlined? Because they must say, it's a bit of a nonsense. Yeah. And then maybe they've created that intentionally.
I think 2025 and 2026 are going to be interesting years, because businesses are pressing reset. And when I say reset, they are looking at not doing the same thing. So when you talk about people, and I might have worked 40 hours before, and I want a better life. So when they employ now, they're only employing 20-hour contracts. Mm. So they have two people. They're still paying out the same amount of money. They're looking at subcontractor models. They're adapting their businesses all the time. Is that good or bad? I don't know. I think it's different for every business that you talk to.
It's even just though, not even so much that part-time element, because you might have someone who, I don't say it's a kind of marketing type job, you know, doesn't have to be done Monday to Friday, 9 till 5:30.
Yep.
If someone's more creative in the evening after the kids have went down, then, you know, so be it. If that means to start a little bit later that morning, you know, is it such a big deal? Not really. As long as you can measure their output.
That's the difference.
What I want to ask you. Do you think that traditionally, I mean, I've always been a big believer in output. Output outweighs everything any day of the week, okay? But pre-COVID, we were so used to going from work from 9 to 5, okay? Not really focused on output. Has COVID forced business owners to rethink that, to more be focused on results, output that employees need to do, and do they communicate that effectively? Do they do enough, not necessarily performance appraisal, but reviews every quarter? Yeah. Because to do a performance appraisal annually, you know, you can't remember what your employees did nine months ago. Has that forced... Do you think it's forced business owners, SMEs' hands, or
not really? That's a lot. I'm still doing the same thing. To be fair, we see that with companies where they've got maybe an underperformance issue, or looking at maybe promote from within, and there's a lack of detailed documentation to support that, because they're not having the difficult conversations, they're not doing the praise and recognition, not giving that effective feedback. So you need to have well defined like key performance indicators. How's that shared in the business, and how does each individual role play a part within that? So what's their own goals and objectives to feed into that?
So this is putting you a little bit on the spot. In your own business, how often do you look at the team, the wider team's
performance? So we have, we do 90-day quarter. So 90-day chunks around what we're looking to achieve in that quarter. Each individual has a quarterly review on their objectives, and we do a monthly check-in, which is a bit shorter. And then there's observational feedback takes place during the course of the week. So that observational feedback for us might be what we've heard on a telephone call with a customer. It might be something we've saw in the CRM system, good and bad, and they get feedback on that as and when we see it. And then there'll be a monthly sit down just as part of a check-in with them. That's what we do in our business.
Did you say you do a weekly check-in as well?
No, just a monthly check-in, but there'll be observational feedback that will happen. So some people might get feedback 3 or 4 times a week, some might go once or twice, depending on what you've seen. And again, we've got people who are in the office some days, we've got some people who are on site with clients, we've got some people that are maybe working a little bit at home. So what you're trying to do there is we've got our setup is through Daytel, as the telephone calls are recorded. So we'll go in and just do kind of spot checks on that, picking out, you know, good training opportunities, things that people have done well. And in our CRM system, we track all that as well. So people get that. That's part of their performance discussions.
How do people take to that quarterly performance review? Because this is now the norm for you. It's the culture. How important is it in terms of rewards and recognition and growing and keeping the same pool?
I think people want to know what they're doing well. And the feedback I get is that they don't always want to hear all the good stuff. They actually want to hear what they can do to improve. And it's like, if you talk about kind of football teams, sometimes they say they actually learn more in defeat and adversity. So, you know, not to the same extreme, but I think people say to me that, you know, how they learn is if they get told this is what you need to do better or this is what you could have done differently the next time.
So you turn the negativity into a positive.
Yeah.
With them.
Yeah.
That's where I see, like, well, the working from home. I mean, I'm taking a workshop environment, but when I was starting off, I've got a room full of all the experience, all the retiring guys.
Yeah.
And this is the amount of knowledge I gained from that environment. But you're losing that now.
I know, definitely. No. And that's the issue, because I remember when I started as a skill seeker down at the Scythe Dockyard in their personnel department. So you had the personnel department down one side and industrial relations on the other, all the guys that were managing the discussions with the unions. And I'd be maybe putting stuff on the HR system in the morning, then I'd be filing it. We had like something like 5,000 files, existing employees. So all I'd be doing is filing. But as you're filing, you're listening to phone calls, you're listening to meetings, and I was just a sponge. Whereas now, if you're in an office environment, you've got that opportunity. But if you're at home, you're missing out on that type of thing. Yeah. There's only so much you can do via Teams. So I think it has got a place, but I think certainly if you're trying to develop someone early stages of the career, you want them in the business so they can pick up that sort of thing. So it's the experience with the people that have been around, like you say, Mike, you know, that's all in people's head. How do you train that? And that's not something you can really put down in a process manual or a document. It's just, you know, that's just asking these questions on a day-to-day basis and being with them.
There's a conveyor belt. There's a conveyor belt of change when you're working remotely as well, because you not even just look at the business model, you know, and then you look at the money spent in the local towns and cities, but then you look at people, the levels of anxieties and depressions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That are wrapped around it. So change is good, but it's also bad as well. And sometimes I say to myself, has it been such a dramatic change? Could it have been a little bit easier?
Mm-hmm.
Could we have went into it slower?
Because
it was like all or nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is a bit of a demise in people's mental health, cash flow for businesses as well, and then the levels of engagement, the levels of education that used to be around the workplace, and the camaraderie as well, and the going out for drinks and stuff like that. So we have missed that. I think we've missed quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I think we need to just realign, and I think we need to focus.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a time that a lot of businesses, if they're working remotely, they must meet up every month or say, we're going to do team building now. Yeah. Maybe we'll get heightened value in team building events because of this.
Yeah. Aye. You know, and there's stuff you can do online, you know, in terms of, you know, the technology's there, so it's how you integrate them as being part of the business and that recognition. It's back to leadership as well. What are we doing to equip the leaders to actually manage remote teams? Because traditionally that training's been based on face-to-face kind of feedback. So what training have the leaders had if they're managing hybrid or remote teams?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a change in approach.
I actually want to say something about leadership, but maybe that's a conversation for later on. Because how do you train people for leadership? Okay, so just hear me out, because normally people get promoted into a leadership role. And their point of reference is they've either had a really, really good leader or they've had a really, really bad leader. And they monitor them, depending on where they fall, they will mirror their leadership style on good or bad. Okay, how often do you think organizations invest in training their managers to actually manage and lead people?
Yeah, probably not enough. And even big companies, I remember when I worked for big companies, you'd get promoted from within, you might be the best salesperson, and then on the Friday you get that promotion, start the sales manager job on the Monday. You've not done a sales management or people management course over the course of the weekend. What you've done is taken your best salesperson and put them in a role which is probably not good for them and not good for the business and not good for the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have a look at that, because, you know, maybe being a people manager is not the right thing for them as well.
But that comes along with the onboarding process, and when you're interviewing, what's your goals, aspirations, what do you want to become? I want a new job. All right, so what do you think my job entails?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, what attributes do you think you need to have? Mm-hmm. And it's these conversations.
Yeah. How often do people come out and go, I want your job, or I want to be the...
A lot of people won't do it. But over a period of time, if they are working worth it and you're checking in with them, no, what's your aspirations? This is my aspirations.
Yeah.
What's your aspirations? Can you see yourself taking on more responsibility? Can you see yourself? You know, this is where you find that their hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
They're into football, the hockey, whatever you go, right? Team building, team events. Totally. And then you can watch them when you go out to the pub with them or restaurants with your team and doing team building events.
I was just
going to
say that. That's something that's important. You identify leadership traits, all of that. Because I think back in the day as well, like there would be loads of clubs outside the school, like Boys Brigade, the Scouts, the Girl Guides, all these types of things, the Duke Edinburgh Awards. People doing all these types of things out, you know, whilst they're at school, these kind of hobbies and clubs. And that, you know, there's not a lot of that now. So now you might be looking at the football teams, hockey, well, who, you know, being the team captain or that type of thing. So they're maybe showing these leadership traits, but, you know, there's less of these kind of clubs or interests that people are doing outside the school. Yeah. So they're maybe you're not identifying these leadership traits. They maybe don't know them themselves.
There's also, when you're getting promoted within, it's even having that training and just a bit of knowledge that things will change. People look at you very differently instantly because you're now somebody of power.
Yeah.
And these people that you've been friends and you have been maybe going out with suddenly are not so interested anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a shift. But if you've not been even alerted to the fact that this is going to happen, then it's a bit
That's right.
Something to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And another issue, them still thinking, well, I'm still going to be everybody's friend. Pal, it's like, well, there is that kind of line and you can still have that
shout at you. Power trip was a big one. It's always power trip. Yeah. You're on a power trip. Oh no, this is actually my
trying to make their mark early on, and
well,
so that might be a conversation for another day.
Well, very good.
That was a very good one. I enjoyed that.
Thank nice to have you on again.
Good, Tom. Good to be back. Thanks for asking me.
And Madhu, we're going to push our button.
This is your world.
Shape it,
or someone else will.